We made this.
Welcome to We Buy Records. I'm Paul Field and I'm joined as ever by my co-host, Mr. Tim Scullion.
Hi, Paul. Hey, Paul, Record Store Day's over for another year.
Hooray!
We'll be getting to the meat of Record Store Day and our experience with it later in the podcast. But Paul, it's news time, first of all.
What have you got, Tim?
Well, I'm wondering if we should change the segment to just be Bowie news.
No.
The news is Bowie-related again. This time, a new Bowie box set has been announced. I know. It's going to be released in June. And I say box set.
How many discs, Tim?
It's a one-disc box set.
One?
Well, nah, it comes in a box.
Ah.
So it's one record in a box with some printed matter.
Right.
And it's a collection of nine rare demos that Bowie recorded in 1969. How much would you pay for a single disc of early demos? Let's imagine that it was like a Mute Records calculator band that you actually cared about. Nine demos, early recordings.
Well, I think I do have a box with one record in, which is a Devo box set, which has cocktail sticks and it's all like Art Deco. It's really fancy. I think I paid about £40.
That's quite a lot, isn't it?
It was a lot for a single disc.
Well, on pre-order, Amazon UK has this for £86. Juno has it for £76 and Norman Records has it for £79. So in other words, it's around the £80 mark.
So £10 per track, nearly.
Well, I've done the maths for you.
Oh, but, excellent.
But before I tell you the maths, although you are very close, this comes hot on the heels of another Bowie box set, which was released in April of this year. And if we compare them, that one was called Spying Through a Keyhole. And that was also a collection of early demos, this time from 1968. But they have been spread, in this instance, across four 7-inch singles.
Ugh.
That come in a little box. So they're spread across eight sides of vinyl when they would actually all fit onto one disc. But it was half the price at only £40.
Yeah, I can just about see someone wanting that as a nice thing to look at, and, you know, but the other one is ridiculous.
Well, I've done the maths. The per song outlay for the 7-inch box set is £4.44 a song. It's okay, I suppose. And the upcoming single disc box set is going to be £8.88 per song.
That's going to drop like a stone, I fear, because I think that they're going to catch a few early fans out with it, and then that price will plummet.
I hope so.
So, Tim, you know we did a poll about cellophane.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Yep. I've done another poll. It's on stickers.
I think next time you should ask me before you do one of these polls.
I know, because nobody's going to want to have...
Surely.
This time we have 122 people who voted on whether to leave stickers on records. And I asked people for their removal techniques. 49% of people take the stickers off.
Mm-hmm. Sensible.
And 51% leave them on. We have had some replies. Always have a scalpel next to the record player. Helps loosen one corner of a sticker. Then peel slowly while praying to the vinyl gods for no tears. What do you do anyway?
I don't know. If it's like a sticker from some cool American record shop that I'm never going to go to, then I might leave it on just as a little like, oh, look where that's come from. But in general, I don't know, it's, you know, the sleeve art has been done for a reason, isn't it? And it's not to be obscured by our price stickers.
Well, you mentioned our price stickers. They are the only ones that I leave on.
No.
Dude, I've got this such a fondness for our prize because of the record. I don't know why I leave them on. All other prize stickers, they come off. Of course, people have mentioned hype stickers on cellophane and stuff. They leave those on. I'm more about talking about price stickers in this poll.
We did once get in the shop a soundtrack album, which I took a picture of and put online. If I can find the photo, I'll share it again so people can see it. I think that there were quite big circular price reduction stickers. There were probably about 8 of them on there. And rather than putting them each sort of more or less on the same position, they've kind of covered the whole cover with these massive price reduction stickers, which is quite funny. But I did, in reality, take them all off before selling that record.
Yeah, I've seen that before, especially on dance records that have been reduced and they've been through Notting Hill, etc., and they're just completely covered.
Well, it just makes them look really tragic, doesn't it?
Yeah. Simon Galloway has said, depends. Hype stickers stay on. If new and price sticker on shrink wrap, it stays on. If it's on the sleeve, he removes it. Generally leaves them on for used and Chazza purchases so he can work out where he got them from. To be fair, Simon does present a show, Charity Shop Classic, so that's actually useful for him and not many other people.
Well, funnily enough, I just got a record recently and as I was pulling the disc out of the sleeve, I noticed that they had peeled the price stickers, etc., off the cover and stuck them on the inside of the sleeve. Yeah, Paul's face was good then.
Yes.
So if you want this memory, you've got it, but it's nicely hidden away on the dark grey inside of the record sleeve. So that, maybe from now on, that might be my tip, that I might actually start doing that.
Yeah, leave them on the inside. That's a good idea. I might start doing that as well.
So Twinkle Toes Tracy on Twitter makes a very good point about glossy covers, and not the old-fashioned 60s, 70s laminated covers, but just this high layer of gloss that modern record covers tend to put on them. And you'll have experienced this. You think a sticker is peeling off really, really easily, and it turns out what you've done is you've peeled off that thin layer of gloss.
Yep, and you've got a nice big circular
sort of matte bit. Yep. Yeah, and it looks awful. Yeah, I've done that.
Been there, done that.
I did that with my copy of Big Science by Laurie Anderson. It's got a huge, horrible, matte, massive circle on it from this really huge hype sticker that it had on it. So thank you, Twinkle Toes Tracy, for that thought about gloss. Quite right. Brian Riccio says, if it's an old Atlantic promo-only sticker that takes up the bottom half of the cover, then leave it on. It's very particular example. These are very useful, these tweets, aren't they? Oxfam Vinyl says, gently start peeling it off. Notice that the cover is starting to tear. Say fuck it several times before trying to restick label as if nothing has happened. Always works.
Been there, done that.
Yeah, I think that's actually my most common one as well.
Yeah.
And hope that no one else notices.
Yeah, we've got a few more here. Joe Scaramanga says, price stickers off, everything else left on. Medwin says, Sani cloth, disinfection wipes and a very sharp knife work on most, but not all. Simon Morrison, price labels come off. Stubborn ones get a quick wipe with a dab of white spirit. Wait 30 seconds, then peel off and dry. Neil Morris says, always used to remove, but now always leave as a reminder of where, how much, all part of the story. Phonic Underground, if it's the sticker used to censor the original torso sleeve of the Velvet's debut, I'd leave it be.
Right, yes, thanks.
What do you use when you're taking the price stickers off? What do you soak? Because I use lighter fluid.
Lighter fluid is the best, but because we have our own mix of record cleaning liquid, which is isopropanol and distilled water, we just use that because that's the liquid that we have to hand. And actually, this is what I was going to say. This is really, if I've got a sticker that you just know it's dried and baked on, and if you try to start peeling it, picking it off, you're basically guaranteed to tear off the cover, right? You know those kind of stickers. You know that won't come off. Yeah, cover it in your choice of alcohol, liquid, white spirit, whatever. White spirit actually seems a bit harsh to me.
I'm not sure.
But yeah, some kind of alcohol. Leave it for a bit. And my extra tip is, if I know it's really, really welded to the cover, I never do any peeling whatsoever. I grind downwards.
Ooh.
And it works unbelievably well. And it's not something that I've seen people do, but my God, it works. So what you do is you put your liquid on, let it sit there for 30 seconds and just gently rub back and forward with your thumb or finger. And it might even seem like nothing's happening. Suddenly the very uppermost layer of the sticker paper, whatever it is, will start to give way.
Yep, got you.
Then you get down to the white paper underneath that's still part of the sticker, but the print has been ground off. Then you get down past the white paper, you get to the layer of glue, and then it's just glue sitting on a record sleeve. And you may need a little bit more liquid at that point. But yeah, there's definitely an art to it, and I have fucked up a lot of sleeves learning my craft. But my God, now I'm like a ninja.
Yep. Apologies to the probably 20 plus more people who've responded to this, but yeah, we can't get to everyone's reply, but we do read them.
So, Paul, as you may remember, last week you and I went booting together.
Yes.
For the first time ever.
Yeah, is it the first time we've been together?
I think so. Wow. It was quite romantic, wasn't it?
It was 5 o'clock in the morning, is
yeah,
what it was,
Tim.
Yeah,
it was 5 o'clock in the morning.
It was an interesting day because it was a below par weather day.
Yes.
It wasn't a bank holiday or anything. It was a kind of a real bog standard, looked a bit grey Sunday morning. So we had fairly low expectations.
Yes.
Now, we managed to get round 3 boot fairs and be home by 9.
Yeah, I think it was 9 or half 9. Yeah. Was it about 9?
Yeah, I think it was.
I did suffer for that later in the day.
Yeah, yeah. Here's the thing. People do boot fairs their own way. We're not here to tell you what's right or what's wrong. But I think you were surprised by how early I was suggesting we arrive.
Because a lot of people weren't even set up yet, you know. So I was thinking this is a risk because you're here, you're potentially the first person to see these stalls, but there must be more lazy sellers who haven't even arrived yet in some cases, I think.
Yeah. The thing is, I mean, it's different in different places because they have different setups. Some won't let you in until they've all set up, for example. Some start later in the morning. But the one we go to, the big one in Polegate, people who get there the really early and first tend to be regulars, and I tend to not pay them that much attention. It's the people who are coming as a one-off who have, or who are likely to have, decent records that they're trying to shift.
Because it's their own records. That's,
correct.
That's the difference.
Yes. Yeah, they're not traders. How did we do it the first one?
I bought some comics. I don't think either of us bought a single record.
No, we didn't. And I will say, when I said to you, oh, there's some people just arrived about to set up, and you suggested we go walkabout, and I was like, okay, you know, you were my guest. I was happy to go with you. And as we returned, we saw a dealer walking away with a whole box of singles.
Luckily for you, it was a box of 7-inch singles,
yes,
which you have less than no interest in. So in fact, for you, I think you could, you know,
I wasn't,
you can write that off.
Yes. For you, however, although to be fair, at that boot fair, roughly at that where that guy was as well, I bought 2 boxes of 90s or late 80s 7-inches. And there was some amazing stuff in there.
Is that where you got the kind of jukebox sevens from?
No, that was from a shop in Southampton where he was selling them for 10p or whatever.
At some point, you're going to have to tell listeners about these
yes,
90s jukebox 7-inches you got, because you were a jammy man on that occasion.
So we hot-footed it to another boot fair, which opened at 7. We got there about 7:15, I think it was.
And it was a disaster.
Well, there were
about eight tables, maybe 9.
A few more than that, but there were 3 sellers who had records. There was the one guy I bought 3 records from who had 3 new, effectively, records, didn't he? Jess Glynn, Paloma Faith,
yeah,
Rag and
Bone
Man.
What, the last 2 yep, years? Yeah.
He had a huge selection of CDs that weren't Toot. And I bought a few items from him. And after our podcast last week, he had a Beastie Boys anthology, like nice box. So I bought that as well on CD, as well as 3 albums. And he only wanted a 5 each for them. I thought they were already underpriced. So I offered him 17 quid for the three albums and this Beastie Boys box set, and he haggled himself down to 16 quid.
It was funny.
It was very funny. However, moments later, the same seller wasn't quite as generous with you, Tim.
I couldn't work out what I was doing wrong, because I'd pulled out a stack of CDs and one record, and he asked me for £40, and he'd asked you for three LPs and one CD.
I should also point out,
£16.
Yeah, I should point out that all those albums I bought, he put, not all of them came with the CD. He put the CDs in as well as a bonus.
Yeah, because he said, "Oh, what? Now I think I've got the CD of that. Hang on." And he fished around in his box, found the retail CD version, and popped it in.
Yep.
So it was your face, mustn't it? Something about your face was like, this guy gets it. And then me, not so much.
He could smell the record shop owner.
Yeah, I was really unhappy about that, because it was good sort of classic pop rock CDs, but they were CDs that I was buying that I wanted to sell mostly. But we would have sold them in the shop for £3 or £4, and he wanted £3 or £4. And it's just, you know, I mean, that's basic maths.
Yeah. We think that there was a lot, and they were all as new. We suspect, because he was a music teacher and he was talking about ripping them, that he'd expensed the whole lot and then was just getting some money back for them.
Yeah, so every penny was just a recoup on top of the expense.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was curious. And he's there every week, so maybe we should go again and see.
He's got any more records? Other than that, there were a couple of other stores with records, but I did buy a Nick Kershaw 12-inch for £1 while you were still...
I was talking to somebody about that this week. They were into their pop, and I was asking, why was my mate Paul excited about buying a Nick Kershaw 12-inch? They couldn't understand either.
We then hot-footed it over to Hastings, or Icklesham, outside of Hastings, where normally there is a good... vibrant, busy, bustling boot fair. Not on Sunday, there wasn't. There must have been a couple of rows. Very, very strange. However, as I got first dibs on the last stall...
I invited you... I didn't even realise. I just thought I'd spotted them.
I invited you to go to the box of records first. Did you not notice that?
No.
It's like an unwritten... because if you're together, but you've got to kind of...
No.
Otherwise, you'll end up like falling out.
God, you're Mr. Smooth. I had no idea. Fuck. So anyway, yeah, I got first look. You got second look. And we both bought some... I think, did you buy a couple of things from there? He was doing them for £1 each.
Yep.
They were tatty as hell, both sleeves and disc. But what did I get from there? Talking Heads, Talk, all the talk bands.
Yep.
I got a Warm Leatherette by Grace Jones, fantastic album. They really were worn, and a quid was you know the right price for them.
But could you tart them up and put them in the cheap box? Someone will enjoy them, I would think, at some stage. They've been, you know, a little bit of kindness shown to them.
Well, for the time being, I'm enjoying them, so it'll, you know, I'm happy. You know, I'm happy really.
I think I got a New Beat compilation and a Propaganda 7-inch, and I spent £1.50.
And do you remember there was a trip hop double LP, like This Is Trip Hop kind of thing that had a bit of a tear on the cover?
Oh yeah,
and that both of us left. You know, we both looked at it and we're like, yeah, from the same, you know, from
yeah,
the same.
Yeah, I remember.
Couple of hours later, I was looking on Facebook, and a friend of mine had put, "Now playing This Is Trip Hop record with a familiar tear on the cover."
That's brilliant.
And I said, "I know where you got that. You got that in Icklesham." And he said, "Yes, I did. 50p. So it goes to show, sometimes going an hour later and getting the dregs, but half the price.
So overall, a middling experience.
Oh, terrible. It was rubbish. It was rubbish. And so, okay, and the thing, I think I said this to you a couple of times while we were there, it kind of reminded me why I don't do many car boot sales, because we're in a very lucky position being in a shop that has a good reputation. We actually get a lot of good records through the doors. So I don't necessarily have to be hunting at 5 a.m. for records. And when we saw, as you pointed out, other regular hunters who you know by sight, who are far more aggressive and elbowsy than either of us are.
I pointed out that guy, didn't I, who's twice physically push me out of the way twice. I'm not sure what will happen if or when there's a third episode of this, because that is bang out of order.
Yeah, I can guess what might happen. So it did make me think. It was fun. It was fun to, you know, to sort of have a laugh while doing it, talking to you about it. But it can be quite a depressing experience. And there's that sense of, like, you know, post-apocalyptic, every man for himself kind of vibe, which I don't know that I really like that much.
Yeah, there are better boot fairs. You just need to get out of the local sphere. And I know we normally talk about sharing the knowledge, but not everything is going to be shared.
Paul, how was Record Store Day for you this year?
Well, I'm going to say I'm very glad that we are recording quite a few weeks after the event, because on the day, I was really cheesed off. Now, in the past, a group of very avid music buyers might be flippers, probably flippers.
They're flippers.
They're flippers. Spoil it by going in as a pair and buying 50, 60 items each. The shops really struggle to cope with having to find that many items. First thing in the morning, that they're not prepared with a list like I mentioned, you know. And would you believe it, they turned up at the shop I go to this year.
And they haven't done before, have they?
Never seen them before there.
Because you've seen them.
Oh, I've seen them.
But at different shops.
And I didn't clock them at first. Now, normally we arrive at 6:45. I think we've been first, second, third, you know. We were 10th, 12th. We were quite a way back. And I couldn't quite see this gang of people at the front. And even after, when they'd opened the doors and they'd gone in, it wasn't until they got to the till. Now, this shop is in a basement, so you have steps going down. I was stood on the steps outside, and there's a window to my right where I had a perfect view of the till and what was happening. And I saw these records start coming over and then being piled onto the counter, being put into bags. And I thought, I've seen this before. Oh, no. Oh, no. Then they started paying one card, two cards, three cards. Yeah, if they're buying 60 items each, we're talking a bill of £3,000 to £4,000.
Oh,
they
God.
Bought all the box sets. They bought up anything that was limited, it had a resale value. They bought it. And there's nothing that the shop owner could really do about it, because they knew their rights. They were first in the queue. They were entitled to it. So where they had stuff set up for people, they were taking stuff out of that to give to these idiots. It completely ruined it. So, of course, when I got to the counter for my 808 box set, gone.
So the shop had very kindly put stuff aside for
regulars.
They don't
put it aside.
Well, no, I was going to say, had very kindly allocated so that if you were to get there in time, they have your bounty ready for you.
Yes.
But if someone else comes along and there's no other copies left, they will dip into your stash.
Absolutely.
Which is entirely... Yeah, yeah, it is right. But I can imagine you stood there watching this happen. Because would you have flipped that 808 box set?
Of course not. It was for me. I don't. We never ever although we might go around the boot fair looking for stuff to flip, we would never do that on Record
Same
Store
here.
Day.
Never
Absolutely.
Ever.
That's just like an unwritten rule amongst, you know, vinyl fans. You just don't do it. And I did feel sorry for the owners, because I looked at him. I said, "Do you know who they are?" And he's like, "Yeah, I know who they are." It's just, you know, people in the queue behind me, they started, you know, there was a lot of mumbling and groaning, and it just ruined it. I did pick up a few items. I got Orbital, Yazoo, Left Field. Once they said, "Oh, we've had to sell your 808 state," I just thought, you know what? I'm done. I'm not buying anything else. I paid for my items and left. What about you, Tim? How was yours?
A friend of ours, very kindly, because we were running the shop as usual that day, they very kindly said, "Look, give me a little list, and anything I can get for you, I will get." We gave them a list of about 6 items, including the Lost in Translation soundtrack and the Ghost World soundtrack, that both we particularly wanted. They were both long gone, unfortunately, by the time he got to the, you know, his place in the queue. But he did manage to get for us the François de Roubaix soundtrack 7-inch and the Radiophonic Workshop Stone Tape 10-inch soundtrack, which I'm very happy with that.
Yep.
So it meant I spent, what did we spend? One was about 18, one was 12 or something like that. So 30 quid.
Perfect. Now, do you remember we talked about what happens if things do go wrong and you end up looking online to get an item that you were unsuccessful for on Record Store Day?
Yes.
And the only tip that we really kind of wanted to, you know, hammer home is
wait
that first 48 hours. So I've been on eBay and had a look at the sales for completed items for Record Store Day, and first 48 hours, or indeed the first day. So here we have Queen, the Bohemian Rhapsody limited edition picture disc. That sold on Record Store Day for £205. Now,
oh my God,
£60. Something you were after.
Yes.
The Lost in Translation soundtrack. Now, this must have been very sought after, because on Record Store Day, it sold for eBay £191. Now, it's still £75. So wow. That's a real sought-after item. But this is an absolute zinger. Brian May, 12-inch, New Horizons, Record Store Day, top-selling price. Do you want to have a guess?
So this is on eBay from private sellers.
Yep. Sold on Record Store Day, completed the sale on
a
that
12-inch picture 12 disc,
inch. I don't think so. I'm not sure if it's a picture disc. It's a 12-inch by Brian May.
So it must have broken 200 quid then, mustn't it?
It did.
Wow.
23 bids, £252.11. Today, sir, £12.27.
No fucking way.
Yes fucking way. Your face is absolutely aghast. That's brilliant, isn't it?
And it's definitely the same thing.
Definitely the same. There's loads of them. Hey, it is what it is. You get people sucked in. There may have been the only copy up at that time. People have a frenzy. They get panicked. They're going to miss out. It's that fear of missing out, Tim. The fear of missing out.
Wow.
We've only got three examples. I'm sure there are plenty more. You're more than welcome to send any in for us, and I'm sure we'll read them out on the show.
Well, as an add-on to that, the concept of the fear of missing out, which I think you're spot on about. We talked before, I think, about the South Park box set.
Yes.
Record Store Day. Now, I think between you and I, we've spoken to a couple of shops who do Record Store Day.
Correct.
Who have both told us, or maybe three shops have told us, that the number of orders they placed for that item for Record Store Day, zero.
Zero, yes, correct.
Because 200 quid retail is offensive.
And nobody wants a hardback book.
And nobody wants a hardback book to justify bumping up that price. And they all received a copy anyway, because yes. Clearly no record shop with any sense actually ordered it in. So the distributors were obviously left with pallets and pallets of this South Park album.
Yep.
And further even to that, in fact, God, there's three parts to this. So the second, that's the first part.
Yeah,
they received
the second
them.
Part. Hopefully, is a lovely act of kindness.
Yes, it is. So the second part is again a shop. I'm not. We're not going to mention who it is, but it's a shop I strongly recommend. But I can't tell you who it is, so it's sort of pointless recommending them anyway. They received one unordered copy, and a young man, I think early 20s, I was told. Came in and expressed an interest in it, and he said, well, I suppose I should buy it because I've already got some of the other previous limited Record Store Day or limited edition South Park related vinyl releases that have been, so you know, I kind of need to have the complete set, so yeah, I think I'm gonna buy it. And they felt so bad for him and felt the price was so ridiculous that they basically removed their commission from the sale and sold it for what, a 45 quid less than the RRP, because yep. They just couldn't bear to sell such a rip-off price. So they basically would have, say, made a pound on that. When it comes to them settling their bill with the distro, they're going to pay back what it's cost them, and then maybe they'll have made a quid.
But that's a really, really nice thing to do, and I'm really pleased to hear that.
And then the final punchline is, now been announced, black vinyl version, South Park, the movie soundtrack, 20 quid.
Perfect, I'll take one.
Record Store Day has to die. I think that's what I'm thinking. Oh, and there's another item that I did manage to get sort of Record Store Day related, which is that I got the Ghost World soundtrack, which was only for Record Store Day, I think 650 copies, incredibly hard to get.
Apart from the one I found in a shop in Folkestone.
Apart from that one, Paul, but I think the label who pressed it up pressed up another batch on different coloured vinyl, I think limited this time to 500 copies, and announced it on the website, and I just ordered one of them.
I'm not a big fan of that. If you're going to do a Record Store Day limited one,
I wondered if you might say that.
Stick to it. To then release it on another variant the next day rather defeats the object. So I can kind of see both sides of the argument. I just think, you know, you've maybe got up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and, you know, potentially in the rain, you've stood there for hours on end, and then suddenly the next day, oh, you can buy it online.
But the one I'm getting will not have the little Record Store Day sticker on the cover.
I don't always keep those anyway.
Oh, my God.
Well, most of the stuff I buy doesn't come with those. The 12 inches certainly don't.
That's the whole point of getting up at 5 a.m. is to get that little sticker. So, Paul, you may remember, I think in the last episode, we looked at some random website's top 50 albums of all time ever. And you'd listened to, I believe, one of them.
Correct.
Which was Madge. I think I'd listened to about 35 of them.
Yep.
We had some comments on Twitter saying, what the fuck is this list? That it's, you know, people were pouring some amount of scorn on the list.
Quite rightly.
And something else we touched upon in the last episode was real people are listening to pop music, aren't they? They're not listening to classic rock in their car or on their radio at work. They're listening to pop music, which didn't seem to be remotely covered in this list, which led to you wondering if there might be some Spotify data.
There is. I've got 10 years of Spotify data. They've Fantastic. Very graciously supplied all sorts of data. I've got the top most listened to song for the last 10 years by year. Do you want to have a guess, any of them from 2008 onwards?
Is one of them going to be Taylor Swift?
No.
Oh. Is one of them going to be Katy Perry?
No.
Is one of them going to be Aphex Twin?
Definitely not. I'll run through them quickly. So yeah, 2008, it was The Killers with Human. 2009, The Black Eyed Peas, I Got a Feeling. 2010 was Eminem and Rihanna, Love the Way You Lie. 2011 was Don Omar and Danza Kuduro. 2012 was that, is it Gautier? Somebody that I used to know.
Mm-hmm.
2013, Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, Can't Hold Us. 2014, Pharrell Williams with Happy. 2015, Major Lazer, Lean On. 2016 was Drake with One Dance. And 2017 was Ed Sheeran with Shape of You.
I would say, Tim, that they're all pop records.
They are, Tim. That's what the kids are listening to. I've got the top streamed artists of all time. And we're talking billions here in terms of streams. So this is, you know, this is real people, what they're listening to, billions of streams. So this is, you know, this is a pretty accurate reflection of what people are actually listening to. It ain't Led Zepp.
What I was going to say is there much crossover with the top 50 albums of all time list?
None. Do you want to have a guess? You should be able to guess a few of these.
I refer you to my previous answer.
Right. Shall I go through them? Number 10, Ariana Grande. Number 9, Calvin Harris. Number 8, Justin Bieber. Number 7, Coldplay. Number 6, Kanye West. Number 5, Rihanna. Number 4, The Weeknd. Number 3, Eminem. Number 2, Ed Sheeran. And number 1, he's been mentioned on this podcast a few times now, Drake.
Really?
Yes. Why do you look so shocked?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I know he's big, but I didn't... Wow. He's just some bloke. That's amazing. Well done, Drake. Drake, if you're listening.
Yes, I know he's a regular listener.
Congratulations. All the best from me and Paul. Lots of love. Well done.
But I suspect a lot of our audience, they're not listening to that. And they're probably not listening to that, a lot of that top 50.
They're more Knights of Reb fans.
They're not. I think our audience are somewhere in the middle, off left of centre somewhere, little curveballs, because I don't think they're listening to either end of that spectrum.
But so then what conclusion are we supposed to draw between Spotify data and, you know, what algorithms say is, like, these are the classic albums?
You like what you like.
That's a crap conclusion. I hate it.
So So shop of the week this week, Tim, is As the Record Turns, which is in Los Angeles. It's on Hollywood Boulevard, and it's up a little kind of what they call like an artisan alley. It's run by a wonderful couple, and it specializes in soundtracks, exotica.
Sounds up my street.
60s, 70s, and then a little bit through to the 90s. The stock in there is amazing. The condition of everything is beautiful. He really knows his stuff, this guy. And it's not just about going in there to buy records. It's to go and meet this couple who run it, and they will regale you with stories of record buying, producers, artists. They've been there donkey's years. When Hollywood films have records in them, they go to that shop.
Oh, wow.
That's where they go to get them. And if they need specific records, he'll find them for you. They do get quite a lot of famous people in there, Tim. Now, you've got a record store. Anyone famous come into your shop?
We had that bloke who was in a couple of episodes of Doctor Who. I think his name's Mark.
Right, excellent. Okay. Now, it's not obviously not a pissing competition.
However, it's going to be relatively hard to beat that.
They're going to struggle to beat that, but they, among their customers, in fact, when I was in there, he showed me a picture of somebody who'd been in there quite recently, who was lolling around on his carpet in the shop, which is a Mr. Morrissey you may be aware of. They have Dr. Dre, Quincy Jones, Snoop Doggy Dogg, Naughty by Nature, Tribe Called Quest, Morrissey, who's on his list, House of Pain, Warren G., Howard Stern, the Wu-Tang Clan, Bobby Womack, the Beastie Boys. They sell and supply records to George Lucas. They've even had George Harrison in their shop.
Before he died.
I mean, these guys are serious players in Hollywood when it comes to records. It's a little bit expensive, but the amount of soundtracks in there is mind-blowing, and they are like as new. You know, you want the Superman 2 soundtrack brand new off the shelf, they've got it. You want Porky's soundtrack off the shelf, they've got it. They do have some newer stuff. And we found a Madonna double pack promo 12 on the shelf. Been there probably since new. But they only wanted like $10 for it. And it was probably, you know, it was worth a fair bit more than that. That wasn't their area. If you are doing the tour in LA, you're going around all the record shops, you're going to do all the Amoeba and all this kind of stuff, that is probably the best one if you just want to soak in some atmosphere, because they will regale you with stories. And on the way out, if you've bought something, they've got a big box of free records. You can help yourself.
That's nice. I've seen shops do that. It's a nice idea. Do you think it's easy to... I mean, are the records shite and therefore it doesn't need policing?
You know, they're inside the shop as you leave. But, I mean, nobody's going to take the mickey, are they, if you're going into that kind of shop with that kind of friendly...
Have you met record collectors?
You think they're just... No, I think you help yourself. You take one, that's it. You wouldn't take more than one. You wouldn't, would you?
I wouldn't.
The indignant look on your face then.
It's a nice idea, and it's something that... Because I saw it in a shop and I thought, wow, that's a really great idea. And we've got records that... frankly aren't worth anything to us, even though they are not complete rubbish, but they're sitting around. They're just like pop albums that we don't like, the album by Pussycat from the mid 70s that we, you know, if somebody wants it for free then fine. But I've just been thinking about
thank you for spending money with us today, or thank you for your purchase today, please help yourself to a free record.
Did the box of records have that sign on it, or did they tell you verbally?
I'm not sure, but I think, and I honestly can't remember, but I'm pretty sure the deal was that if you had purchased something, you could take a free record, which I think is the way to do it. That's why I'm saying that's what you should put on the sign. By saying, thank you for your purchase today, please accept a free record, that means that it stops browsers helping themselves and emptying it within 2 hours.
Right, watch this space. No, it's a lovely idea. You said that the prices were a little high.
Yes.
Something that I have noticed time and again in record shops, and something that I notice in our own shop where people come in and say, have you got X artist? Have you got Bowie, Kate Bush, Talk Talk, Talking Heads, you know, I mean, it's a long list of just sort of popular artists that people want to come in and buy an album off. The answer is very often no, because we price things to sell. And therefore, popular artists, Zappa is another one, Captain Beefheart's another one. If we get it in, we put it out at the right price and somebody buys it. I do sometimes think shops that have an incredible selection of records, everything you could ever want, they've built that up because all of them are a little bit too expensive. And so they all sit there, in fact, for longer than they should do.
Well, there's a... Have I ever told you about the Vinyl Warehouse in Maastricht, which has I want to say 500,000 records in there. When I say a warehouse, I mean a warehouse.
But that you can go in and browse.
Oh, yeah, you can go in and browse. You know, they've got like 30 copies of No Parlay. I think we did buy a couple of items, but they'd been pretty much priced up by a lunatic. There was, I think it was Vince Clarke and Paul Quinn did a 12-inch on mute, and there's a German multicolored vinyl version of it.
They are pretty, those.
Are very pretty. It's worth £3. And I think in there it was £20, something like that. And he had a few of them. And when I questioned the price, he was like, oh, I regularly sell this for €50. And I'm thinking, you lying bastard.
I mean, that is literally just a lie, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bare-faced lie. Yeah, absolutely. And there's your reason why he has 500,000 records in stock.
I did think that. I was in a shop in, I think it was in Brighton, and the selection was just incredible. And that same, it dawned on me. It was because they're all about maybe over £10 too much. You know, so stuff that we might sell for 7 or 8, £20 every time. And you just think, well, that, you know, yes, it means you've got an unrivaled Frank Zappa section. You've got every Zappa LP. But it's because, that you know, any casual person that fancies buying it will be put off by the price. I don't... So how are these shops making money?
From the unsuspecting or the... I just don't understand. You buy a lot of records, or you're a regular buyer of records. We've said this before on this podcast. You have a device in your pocket that tells you the price of every record ever made.
It's weird, isn't it? It's weird. You would think that at this point, shops would just accept that, no, I can't ask £8 for a £1 12-inch on, you know, Discogs from 72p. No, you can't ask £8 for that. But unfortunately, people still do. But we'll teach them.
We will.
If there's nothing else this podcast will achieve, it will be to grind people down and make them do things how we want them to be done.
One of the worst offenders, okay, and I've called him out on this. I wrote a stinging review on Google Maps where he had £2 Erasure 12 inches at like £13. He had £6-7 Prolocult 12 inches at £18. It was just the most overpriced shop. Me and Catherine were in there and we were like holding our hands over our faces to stop ourselves laughing. He had no other review apart from mine. Somebody went there not that long ago and he closed down. That's a win.
Poor result. You've crushed someone's dream. I think he deserved it though, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, of course. Awful man.
Paul, I've cooked up a rotten review challenge for you.
Oh, God, go on.
So your challenge, should you choose to accept it, is to identify the album from Amazon one-star reviews.
Right.
So I'm going to give you 5 reviews, snippets they are, and I think they're in descending order of, you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
So here we go. Let's see if you can, in fact...
Is it 5 different albums or is it the same album?
No, it's the same album.
Oh, okay.
And it's an album that you know.
Okay.
Or that you... No, it's an album that you should know.
Ah, okay.
So...
This could go horribly wrong then.
Well, what I'm going to do, if you happen to get it straight away, to make it more fun for me and potentially more fun for listeners, I might ask you to hold it in while I get through the first couple, just on
of
the
course,
off chance
yeah.
that you get it instantly. Okay.
Okay, I'll keep my powder dry.
So clue number one, this is from a real Amazon one-star review for this record. And I should say, you know, some of my all-time favourite techniques for shit reviews are in here. And also pomposity, which is I think is a must if you're going to review something on Amazon. Number one, if self-help books came with musical accompaniments, this is what they'd sound like. Nice, non-thought-provoking, non-challenging background music for the masses to lap up. Yum.
I've got an idea, but I'm not going to say anything yet. One of the words in there could have been a big giveaway, but I'm not sure.
So I should move on to number two.
Go for it.
Number two. This is, in my opinion, techno at its best. However, because it's techno, it's awful.
Right, now I haven't got a clue.
Okay, let's see if the third clue gets you in the right direction. I honestly fear for mankind after hearing this album. If you're finding absolutely anything about this album to be inspiring, exceptional, unique, or even good in the slightest, you obviously haven't heard nearly enough real music. The artist's formula is to take a sample, loop it, and add drums. He does this over and over again. For some reason, people find this deep.
Is it Sven Vath?
It's not Sven Vath. It's a good guess. I'm perfect with your guess. Here we go. Clue number four of five. This album has no business being the number one dance DJ pick whatsoever. How this album has anything to do with techno is beyond my understanding, which is probably attributed to the fact that this album is not techno. I wouldn't even call it electronica. It's more of a fusion between blues and synth sounds in an attempt to reflect how depressed this person feels.
Ah, is it Moby?
Which album?
Play.
It's Play by Moby. Oh, well done, Paul. That's brilliant. Well, so, okay, if you hadn't got it until now, would clue number five have given it to you? The first track starts off with Gunna Honey Gum Bay, or whatever it is they're saying. And I kept waiting for it to change, but it never did. Sure, he added some drums in later, but is this music? Well done, Paul.
I'm really pleased. And not only that, not that long ago, I think it was was the end of last year or this year, they actually finally released on vinyl the Play B-Sides album.
Yes, I saw that listed actually when I was researching this. So are they good, the B-Sides?
Yeah, they're really good. There was a mute promo of some of them, which was available on vinyl, which I actually found in not just a record shop in Eastbourne. That's a really cool thing to find in there. Yeah. And of course, he was selling it for way less than it was worth. But now there's a red double vinyl pack of the remixes, and they're really good. Yeah, if you like Play, it's more Play.
I think that's pretty much it for this week.
Just to say, Tim, after last week, you and the guys over at Amazing Tapes also suggested that I listen to Huey Lewis and the News Sports.
They did, didn't they?
They did, and I did. I had it on in the car.
Did you get through the whole thing?
Not all of it. It's what I would describe... two things I'd describe it as. Dad pop.
Yes, quite right.
And it sounded like every track I'd heard already in an 80s movie.
Which you very possibly had. Which actually is a bit like Moby Play again, isn't it?
Weirdly, on Spotify, every single track on that album is marked as explicit.
Is it?
It really is. But I didn't hear any explicit language in it, though, which is weird.
There must be a mild swear somewhere on one song.
Oh. And
that must have flagged the album as explicit, which has therefore flagged each track as explicit. But I can't believe that Huey Lewis is going to be dropping F-bombs on that album.
No, not that I heard.
Unless after the point where you stop listening, it all gets very, very dark.
Yes.
If anybody has any other rockist albums that they'd like Paul to listen to, feel free to suggest on Twitter. I'm not saying he definitely will, but you're welcome to try.
You're welcome to try.
And I think that is it.
Yep, we'll see you next time on We
Buy
Records. Snoop Dogg.
Yes.
Is his name Snoop Doggy Dogg?
Yes, but it's also Snoop Dogg. Can I just say how much like a granddad you wear that? You know, this Snoop Doggy Dog. Yeah. It's his name, Snoop Doggy Dog.